Imagine the government saying that for Elon Musk to sell electric cars, he has to pass a test from Mary Barra. Imagine what that was, right? This is the moment right now that we said, screw off to the system. That's the world we've been living in since COVID, is that saying the most qualified American should get the job is actually an indirect act of racism. Meritocracy is a precondition to efficiency. It's also a precondition to excellence. I'm the CEO, co-founder of a new investment firm called Azuria. Azuria is built on the, I guess it's not really radical, but it seems more and more radical these days, free thinking, meritocracy, and excellence. And the way we effectuate that is through a handful of ETFs that will launch in 2025 that you can buy as easily as you buy a share of Tesla or Nvidia. And the idea is give people access to differentiated positive returns that they otherwise wouldn't be able to have. And so one of those, you know, Farzad, you and I have talked about it on DMs, is this concept of meritocracy, right? Hire the best, most qualified person for the job, no matter what they look like. And that, if you would have said 15 years ago, we're going to start an ETF, an investment fund about investing in companies that are meritocratic, you might look around and say, wait, what do you mean? Why wouldn't a company be meritocratic? Wait, you know, I mean, why wouldn't they hire the best and brightest? It would just seem like a foreign concept. But over the past 5 years, so many companies in America have been captured, Elon would say infected, by this virus that says, you know what? This whole idea of hiring the way that Henry Ford and Sam Walton did, hiring on skill and merit, put that on the back burner for a sec. Let's try to correct the alleged injustices and discrepancies between races through a forced hiring policy. And so this is all abstract, but let's talk about specifics, Hans. Best Buy right now has a public explicit quantitative policy that 1 in 3 new corporate salaried positions will go to BIPOC, Black Indigenous people of color. 1 in 3. Starbucks says they want to achieve racial and ethnic diversity of 30% across all corporate levels. And so Farzad, you have a choice here. You could only have one or the other. You can hire the best and brightest, no matter what they look like, or you can play this woke game of trying to fill roles based on race, gender, and sexual orientation. You cannot have both. And, you know, a lot of people will attack what Azuria is doing and say, well, you're anti-diversity. No, we are anti-forced outcomes through diversity. We're anti this idea that you can guarantee outcomes to certain folks of people. And the reason why is because, forget just for a second the victims of this, which are many, white men, Asian men and women, so on and so forth. But my mom is Hispanic. She's a legal immigrant from Colombia. She worked her way through community college, raising me and my sister. I would go with her and sit outside the lecture hall at Broward Community College, as it was called in the 90s in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And she worked to earn everything she got. My own mother was reluctant to apply to companies with public affirmative action programs, Hans, because she wanted to be hired not to check some diversity quota, but because she earned it. I can't think of anything more patronizing and belittling, and dare I even say racist, to assume that certain Americans cannot achieve greatness on their own, and therefore, Farzad, have to be given this special treatment, lowered standards. That's just un-American. It hurts everybody, but it especially hurts those that it purports to help. And so to come full circle, the Azuria 500 Meritocracy ETF buys the same stocks in the S&P 500 with one and only exception. We do not buy the stock of any company that is playing woke games by having an explicit racial and gender hiring quota. There's a reason why Jensen is doing what he's doing with Nvidia. He has no quotas. There's a reason why Elon is doing what he's doing with Tesla. He has no quotas. There's a reason why Alex is doing what he's doing at Palantir. He has no quotas. The great American companies, from Ford to Tesla to Nvidia, were built on the crazy idea, but really not so crazy if you're a common sense American. Hire the best and brightest, forget everything else, build a great company, and never ever apologize for it.
Yeah, dude, I number one, when are you running for president? So polished. James, you might be the most polished guest we've ever had. My God, very impressive. Truly.
Well, it's because you told me to stand. I would not have been this eloquent had I been standing. There's something about standing. I want to jump up and down.
I love it, dude. Dude, it's so funny. What you talk through, it gets me really pumped up because I feel like we are in a time where this sort of trend of actually focusing back on meritocracy is really starting to take hold. And I think it's born out of those companies, like you said, your Palantirs, your NVIDIAs, your Teslas, countless other startups that no one has heard of yet that are starting to really apply these policies, which is a first principles approach of building a company, which is who cares about race, gender, or anything else that you can't control? Just focus on doing a great job, right? And if I use my own lived example, when I worked at Tesla, no DI policies that I can think of, DI or forced right. diversity policies that they have. By far the most diverse place I've ever been to in my life. That's like, right. No, everyone came from crazy different backgrounds, different sexes, different, just different everything. And everyone was just focused on getting shit done. And that was it. That was it. You got hired based on your merit. You got promoted based on your merit. You were let go based on your merit. It was literally 100% down to what kind of effort and value can you bring forward? And yeah, so let me ask you a follow up then. What are you seeing from your perspective? Are you seeing sort of this momentum starting to pick up of these companies starting to, at the very least, getting rid of these outdated forced diversity policies? What are you seeing from your end?
What I'm seeing is, and you bring up a great point about Tesla, hire the best and brightest, and guess what? You get natural diversity. Natural diversity is beautiful. Saying you're against diversity is like saying you're against marriage because you're against forced arranged marriages, right? I'm pro-marriage. I love the idea, right, of two people coming together, committing themselves to spending a life together, raising a family. It's the quickest way to grow your contributions to the country. But we could be pro-marriage and be against the crazy idea of arranging marriages with 14-year-olds, right? And so it's the same thing here. We're absolutely pro-diversity. I think all of us here are. We saw it at Tesla when you were there, but we're against this forced diversity. And so in that vein, yes, we are seeing wins. You see them with Walmart recently, with Ford, with Tractor Supply. But I have to be a little bit cynical for a moment that these companies didn't come out, Farzad, and say, we were wrong. We are committing to meritocracy. We messed up over the past 5 years. We just tried to play the BLM appeasement game. No, they're trying to play this performative mind trick where they can placate conservative activists, successful ones like Robbie Starbuck, and say, hey, we're changing our ways because now they know that President Trump is going to be inaugurated here in a couple of weeks. But if there's performative DEI, there's also what we call the anti-meritocratic DEI. And that is the most virulent strain of the woke mind virus. It is the forced diversity quotas. It is the idea that you can be hired because of your race, but you can also not be fired even if you mess up because of you're in a protected race versus another. And so to tell you the truth, we've seen big wins on the performative DEI front. You know, Walmart's dropping the term Latinx and they're shutting down their racial equity center. Why Walmart even had one is beyond me. But the truth is, we just haven't seen the same progress on the other side of the DEI ledger, which is anti-meritocratic DEI. Only one company in 2025 ended up abandoning its quotas as a result of public pressure, and that was Molson Coors. And so there's more work to do. This is, you know, one thing that whether it's McKinsey or Bain or Deloitte, they've been shoving this down our throats for 5 years now, that you have to be a diverse company. You have to force this diversity to grow EPS, to grow revenue, to grow share price. Those studies are flawed. They've never been replicated. It's really pathetic what they've done. But to answer your question, we are at the cusp of greatness here. We're at the beginning of the end of DEI. But the operative word there, Farzad, is we're at the beginning. And we cannot take anything for granted. The reason why we had the big win, and I was following you yesterday very closely, Farzad, on the CR front and the Doge. I was just texting Vivek, congratulating him for the success that he had, not just he and Elon and Trump and JD, but they were speaking on behalf of oh, I don't know, 200 million Americans who said, what the F is going on right now? Why are you ramming this through at the last minute? Why is there no public debate? Right. Oh, because it's a scam. That's why. Otherwise, if it weren't a scam, you would publicly debate it on the floor and we'd all could tune in and watch.
When was the last time Congress has done that?
Yeah, exactly. Say what you want about the UK. They're messed up 15 different ways, but at least they have the courtesy of coming together and debating once a week in Prime Minister's Question. We don't have that here. When's the last time Mitch McConnell got on the Senate floor and took questions from Democrats and vice versa? And so that's what I respect about President Trump is he comes out in Mar-a-Lago, is just there this past weekend, and he's sitting in the living room taking questions from all these reporters. He's done more press conferences, Hans, as the president-elect in 1 month than Joe Biden has in 4 years. To make America great again, we have to make public scrutiny, open debate, and free expression great again as well.
Yeah. Well, Biden, you know, he needs his rest, James. Come on.
Yeah, he needs to rest. That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
This is an hour nap. They don't do it. They don't do it justice.
Yeah. Go for it, Hans.
So I'm curious. I think that there's a particular type of ingenious in choosing an ETF as a way to wage your particular instantiation of the anti-woke culture war. And yeah. I'm curious why you settled on that as the tool that you wanted to use and what your overall ambitions, what change do you really think that you can affect by simply introducing an ETF?
Yeah, it's the ETF question. It's a good one. It's especially pressing because I don't come from the ETF world. I don't come from the retail investing world. I spent the last 3 years working for a rabid Tesla short seller named David Einhorn. I worked as a macro trader at Greenlight Capital. I mean, you know,
we have the enemy in the house.
Is it in the room with you, right? But, you know, I spent 3 years working at a multi-billion-dollar hedge fund in New York. And, you know, with the exception of Tesla and perhaps a couple other investments, I mean, David Einhorn was a legend. I mean, I read him growing up. I read his book when I was in college, read his letters. They're still very well read and circulated among investors today. But, you know, when you leave a multi-billion dollar hedge fund after a pretty, I think, with all humility, a pretty successful stint, although people, they probably would call it a stunt actually, but you're supposed to also try to start your own hedge fund and try to raise money that way, which is go to family offices, go to pension funds, go to high net worth individuals. And I realized the moment that we're in is not really that moment. One, I didn't really want to help really wealthy people become even more wealthy. I mean, that's fine. I want to be a wealthy person myself. I think we're all unapologetic capitalists here. It's not some Bernie Sanders populist shtick. But what really got me going was this vision, Hans, that 5 years from now, I'd be going through Atlanta Hartsfield Airport and a mom would stop me and say, we put our money in the Azoria Merit Fund instead of the S&P 500 SPY fund, and we outperformed by 3% a year, and we were able to put our daughter through college. We were able to buy a new home. That's what really got me. And also doing something for the country as well. I mean, if you're a private fund, you can't have the same public impact, right? The reason why Robbie Starbuck has been so successful is because it's the platform known as X to rally Americans from all stripes to get behind this idea that a company should actually be a company and not some, you know, woke social nonprofit. And for me, it was, how can we take really a temperature of where the country is, leverage the power of everyday Americans investing, and then also use those everyday Americans as a way to create wealth for them in return? I mean, that was really what motivated me. It's also a time where, you know, if you're a retail investor, you can pull out your iPhone and buy $10,000 worth of stock. Like that. It's never been a better time to be partnering with everyday Americans who put their money on the line to back your thesis. I mean, you know, Alex Karp said it well. You know, retail investor is just another name for people who put their own money on the line to make investments. Because say what you want about David Einhorn, say what you want about Jim Chanos or those people. We have our own quibbles amongst us three about their positions on Tesla. But as successful and as wealthy as they are, their hedge funds are not all of their money. By definition, they're hedge funds. They have external capital. When you've got that single mom who's putting $50,000 in Tesla 5 years ago, that's her money. Win, lose, or draw, she put all of her money on the line behind that bet. And when David Einhorn shorted Tesla, stupidly shorted Tesla, that wasn't his money on the line. That was maybe 90-95% of it was a pension fund in New York, or I don't want to speak to the exact investors, but the typical external hedge fund type who would invest in those types of vehicles. And so that's really what motivated me, was you get to work with people, you get to rally and work with everyday Americans. And I don't think there's been a better time to create an ETF that everybody could tap into. They could be a part of something bigger. And I'll tell you, Azorea isn't just this ETF firm. We're going to have a website, maybe a webinar. We're going to host a roadshow across the country to meet with investors. We're going to host the annual Azorea Summit. We're going to have a meritocracy summit. We'll be back at Mar-a-Lago next year. We want to bring as many people, as many of our investors as possible, whether you've got 5,000 or 50,000 or 500,000 invested with us. We appreciate your trust, and we want to give you an opportunity to be a part of this bigger movement, because that's what this really is, we hope.
Yeah. I think what you're doing is truly brilliant, because I think there are two forcing functions to where I think this is going to be very successful. And to be completely clear, I didn't bring James on because I'm somehow involved with this whatsoever. I just find his post interesting, just to be very, very clear. But I really do think that this is a brilliant thing that you're doing because of two things. One, I think the way independent media has been able to inform the public at a much higher and higher quality rate than legacy media has, I think by default, that's what enables retail investing. I think retail investing exists because of independent media. So that's number one. And then number two, and so what does that mean in the coming years? There's, from my standpoint, you know, I'm independent media. I'm seeing what's going to happen in the coming years is that this space is going to multiply. You know, by the end of the 2040s, I mean, there might be another like consolidation event that happens, you know, because, you know, these things tend to be cyclical. But I do see at least for the next 5 to 10 years, there's going to be a huge increase in the amount of high quality independent media information that's going to empower retail investors to make the right decision for themselves. So that's number one. And then number two, I do think there is going to be a huge forcing function for companies to start adopting policies that are meritocratic at their core. So moving away from forced diversity. And I think this is going to happen with companies like Tesla, companies like Palantir, companies like Nvidia, outperforming everybody by a lot. And when people do a lot of analysis and say, okay, so why, how come Tesla is not the largest company in the world? How come Palantir has 10x in the last 5 years? How come Nvidia is just dominating the entire space? How come, you know, how come Anduril is performing so well? Blah, blah, blah. Just go down the list, all these companies. Right. And I think there's going to be a forcing function for those, what's going to happen is those companies that have employed those policies, when you compare them to the rest of their competitors or everyone else that's going about their usual way or not willing to really adopt that culture to the core, they're going to underperform, right? So now you have two things. You have people that are understanding the gap better, and the people that are the companies that are really taking meritocracy seriously, they're going to outperform everybody else, right? That's right. Why I view what you're doing. I think you have found this gem, you know, and so you're going head first with it. Do you think this is a fair characterization of what you have?
I do, and we may need to put you on the cap table for that excellent summary of what we're doing. But you're right. I mean, hold everything else constant for a sec, Farzad. The company that is committed, and it's not just black and white. You are or you aren't, right? I mean, the meritocracy fund, as it stands, is are you or are you not a meritocracy? But there are companies that are more meritocratic than others in the S&P. And when I think about the best performers, even the Mag 7, for example, right? Tesla, Nvidia, these companies are such full-throated, unapologetic meritocracies. It's not even funny. And that is not distinct or separate from the incredible outperformance that we've seen in these companies over the past couple of years. And so if you're going to take one bet, everyone's like, would you want to be long small caps or mid caps or Europe? Don't touch Europe. It's a socialist hellhole, right? But
I love how everybody agrees.
Yes. But, you know, what do you want to be long? What's the sector trade? Our trade at Azorea is you want to be long America's great meritocracies. It's that simple. If you own companies that are committed to hiring the best and brightest without apology, you will have an incredible decade ahead. And that's what we're building. And so I think that as a result, you know, we were at Mar-a-Lago earlier this month to announce this product. Kathy Wood was there. She's a great friend. She's done great work on the free thinking side. She's an incredible investor, a proud American. The big thing that we did was we announced at Mar-a-Lago that Starbucks is one of the three dozen companies that are in the S&P 500, yet will not be in the Azoria 500 meritocracy fund. And the reason why is because the policy we talked about earlier, 30% racial and ethnic diversity requirement across all corporate levels. But we made a very public ask of the new CEO, Brian Niccol, who came from Chipotle earlier this year. He's an incredible CEO. He turned that company around. When he got to Chipotle Hans, it was a $7 billion company. When he left, it was a $70 billion company. He is a big believer in meritocracy. He didn't put this policy in place, but he's ultimately responsible if he allows it to continue. And so I have a lot of respect for what Brian has done, his leadership style, his operating style. It's time for him to cut it out, to get rid of that policy. That's how you unlock the greatness at Starbucks. Vivek has been tweeting this out a little bit over the last couple of weeks. Meritocracy is a precondition for efficiency. It's no coincidence, Hans, that the inefficiency of our government, the dumb, pointless, nonsensical regulations that are holding back American ingenuity, potential, and greatness, those are also coinciding with forced diversity quotas at the federal government, from the USDA to the FAA to the FDA. And so it's no shock that the most elaborate DEI industrial complex that is the federal government is also afflicted by the same inefficiencies and underperformance that many American companies are. So I agree with Vivek. Meritocracy is a precondition to efficiency. It's also a precondition to excellence. And so for American companies to be excellent, that Maslow hierarchy, that first rung, Farzad, has to be a commitment to meritocracy. Anything else, you got great coffee, you got a great brand, you got a great location. Okay, that's fine. But if it's built on a foundation of wokeness, of this idea that you're going to hire, promote, retain on race and gender as opposed to merit, your company will fail. It's only a matter of time. And our obligation to our investors is we cannot in good conscience put their hard-earned money and invest it in companies that are more concerned with running their businesses like Model UN tournaments as opposed to profitable enterprises. That's our promise to them. We think we'll outperform and it'll be time to deliver when we launch this thing in March.
I love it. How do you think the Trump administration, you know, given that, you know, you're obviously good friends with Vivek, you wear Mar-a-Lago, I'm assuming you have close ties in some respects to the Trump admin in some ways. How do you think they will foster this environment? Like, do they have a capacity or an ability to create this kind of environment from a business perspective with incentives or something that allows this meritocracy principle to take hold? How are you thinking about that?
It's a great question. And I think it's something they absolutely can do. To, you know, my relationship with Vivek and President Trump, you know, I thought I had a great relationship with President Trump. He was there at the event at Mar-a-Lago, but he walks in, he and I are just talking for a little bit. And then he sort of pushes me out of the way and, where's Kathy? He wants to know where Kathy Wood is for Saudis. James, get out of here. Where's Kathy? And he congratulates her on the excellent job that she's done. I mean, she called Tesla when nobody in the institutional community, everyone wants to sort of cherry pick her. This ETF did this versus that. She nailed the biggest move of the generation, which is Tesla. She was on it from the beginning. And for that, she'll forever be enshrined as a free thinking investor. But, you know, so much of what afflicts the government, so much of what prevents it from being a meritocracy is this culture that says that you'd be promoted and you're hired and you're given new compensation because of what you look like, that we needed to have a gay member of the cabinet. We needed to have certain racial diversity at the USDA to match the number of diverse farmers in the Midwest. And so to your question, it's not necessarily that the government needs to do something new. The good news is they have to revert to the way that things were not too long ago, 15, 20 years ago, that you hire just from the cabinet secretary all the way on down to the rank and file of a federal agency, you hire those people based on what they bring to the table. And you also, in the case of the SEC, you don't go buddy-buddy with NASDAQ trying to force independent public companies to make their boardrooms look a certain way to fit a political agenda. And we saw the federal court strike that down this week. That was completely inappropriate. The idea of equity being a point of distribution for federal hurricane relief that we've seen Vice President Harris publicly support. The idea that in my home state of Florida, that hurricane relief would be denied to Trump supporters after the most recent wave of hurricanes in September, right? And so this meritocracy concept, it runs deep. And this is not just a couple bad apples or bad actors here and there. It is a systemic issue that runs through the government. And whether it's the SEC or the USDA or FEMA, there's a real problem here. Fortunately, you don't have to do anything new, except you have to just turn back the clock to the way things were. And I'm confident that Vivek and Elon, look, if anybody doubted Doge, Hans, 24 hours ago, they owe a public apology. Because really what Doge is a vessel for the frustrations and the disaffections of Americans from all walks of life. That's what it is. It's not even a Republican or a Democrat thing. If you're against Doge, you're against efficient government. If you're against Doge, you are for the wasteful use of taxpayer money. And so that's why you're starting to see people like Bernie Sanders, people like Jared Moskowitz from Florida, known, well-known progressive Democrats stand up and say, I'm with Elon. I'm with Vivek in this effort because we have the potential here to deliver in the next 2 years a moment. You know, we're celebrating our 250th anniversary at the same time that Doge will have wound down, July 4th of 2026. I think that's going to be a come full circle moment for the US, that we will return to the vision, the promise, the accountability, the trust, and the transparency that our founding fathers bequeathed to us in this radical experiment called the United States in 1776. And I can't think of a better way to honor them and to honor what they gave all of us here, than to return back to first principles. The most dangerous words in the English language are, this is the way it's always been done.
Yeah.
And what I respect the heck about Elon and Vivek and Trump and JD, they don't care of the Republican Party platform from the late 90s, the stuffy country club, free trade at all costs. It doesn't matter. Bring China in. We're going to save the world. We're going to be involved in every foreign conflict. They're common sense Republicans. And that is what we need now more than ever. And by the way, when folks say they're Republicans, you have to be very careful. What does that mean? Because there are Democrats today who are more Republicans than the Adam Kinzingers, Mitt Romneys, and Liz Cheney's and Mitch McConnell's of the world, right? They want the status quo to continue into perpetuity. And that is the status quo, by the way, that has delivered pretty weak nominal GDP growth over the past 10 years. That's the status quo that has prevented tens of thousands of American businesses from being started every single year. It wasn't until earlier this year, Hans, that in the state of Louisiana, to sell flowers as a florist, you needed to pay a fee, complete an application, and pass a test, a subjective test on floral arrangement, as if there's a right and wrong way to put the roses and daisies and tulips together. But guess what? Who was the person who put that test together? Who was the one who graded you? A florist who's already in the industry. Imagine the government saying that for Elon Musk to sell electric cars, he has to pass a test from Mary Barra. Imagine what that was, right? That regulatory moat, what that does. Look, I'm all for moats. I love a good moat. I love a good competitive advantage. But that competitive advantage has to be driven by actual efficiencies in your business. Walmart is winning because they found a way to wring out the inefficiencies in the supply chain, cut cost, and deliver those everyday low prices to consumers. That's great. What's not great is when businesses like the big floral lobby in southern Louisiana create some arcane state law that pushes out the single mom from Baton Rouge, the single mom who, by the way, may have gotten through no fault of her own, may have lost her job recently and is trying to pick herself back up and saying, hey, I did flowers as a kid for my own grandma. I want to do my own business. Oh, no, you can't, because the floral lobby bribed both Republicans and Democrats in the Louisiana state legislature and said, you know what? You got to jump through 15 different hula hoops while singing a song, while chewing gum, to be able to have the right to earn a living in America. That is not capitalism. That is crony capitalism. And I think for a lot of my friends on the left, so much of their frustration, Farzad, isn't with pure, unadulterated capitalism. It's with this perverted, crony, corporatist capitalism that a lot of Republicans still stand by. President Trump doesn't stand by it, and he won't stand for it. And that's why I think we're on the dawn of a new golden era for America.
Hunt, I saw you came off mute for a second there. Did you want to jump in? Because there's so much there I want to unpack, but I don't want to hog James. Yeah.
No, go for it. The question that I have doesn't tie in here, so we'll save it for later.
A couple comments. I think I really do think the Republican Party of today is not even, I don't even think we should call it the Republican Party, to be completely honest. Like, right. Hunt and I have had this discussion. It's like the MAGA Party. It's whatever this like new common sense party, meritocracy. I don't freaking know what to call it, but it definitely doesn't have the shades of
the elites are retarded party.
Yeah. There you go. That's a good one. It's something else altogether. And this is coming from, I was a Democrat. I left the Democrat Party in 2019, and I was a Democrat largely because I was almost told that the Democrat Party was the party of the nice people and the Republican Party is the party of the racist people. And if you are a Republican, you're racist. And of course, a brown person like me, God forbid. Oh my goodness. How could I, right? So like it was a lot of, and a lot of it was due to mainstream media propaganda, to be completely honest. There's been this stranglehold on this information. So I think that's been a very interesting development. The scope creep from a regulation perspective, or the scope creep we've had, in government as it pertains to just having these sort of rules that florist has to get approval from a competitor to compete in this space. I feel like that sort of idiotic thing exists in so many different nook and crannies of the government and in regulation, right, where we haven't been able to unlock the true potential of the United States really for decades because of all these little hidden things that most people are not even aware of, right? And I think what makes me really, really hopeful with DOGE, from my perspective, and this is why I was really excited about what happened yesterday with them sort of, killing the bill, the 1,500-page bill that they were trying to push through, a couple of days before Christmas. It wasn't even so much that, there was stuff about Congress getting a 40% raise. Is it really a 4% raise? Whatever. Like, there's some nuances around what was in the bill. But the thing that really pissed me off about that whole thing is that even if it's a 4% raise, the bigger issue is that there is 1,500 pages worth of stuff that no one has any idea what's actually happening there, right? And then you have a Congress that has a 19% approval rating from United States citizens. It has allowed the U.S. to incur $36 trillion of debt. We have horrific health outcomes. We have some of the largest obesity rates in the entire world. People are generally very upset. We have a drug epidemic. We have so many different failures in government as it pertains to getting people actual help that need the help versus people that don't really need the help that get the help. It's just a very unresponsive thing, right? And my hope with DOGE is that it really does peel back all that crap so that at the very least we can look at it. And what happened yesterday, in my opinion, I think is confirmation that we will see, I hope, a lot of that as soon as Trump comes into office. And that was one of the main reasons why I voted for him, was to really bring that accountability forward. And so I'm really hopeful from that perspective, because if I know Elon's sort of arc, as I follow him in the past, anything he touches for the first time, it's chaotic, because the guy doesn't go half ass on stuff. He goes full ass. Right? He's like, I'm going to be focused on this. And then it's chaos. Why is it chaos? Because you have an entrenched thing that's desperate to hold on to the has-been. And then Elon's like, nah, meritocracy, let's go. First principles, what needs to get fixed? What have you done today, right? That famous email he sent Parag. What have you done today? If we apply that to government, how is that not going to be one of the most successful projects the US has experienced, I don't know, since its founding? I have no idea. It just feels so profound in so many different ways, you know?
That's right. What have you done today is, it really encapsulates this idea that you have to keep putting points on the board. And yesterday, Doge put 1,000 points on the board. The idea that Mike Johnson, who I guess is a Republican, but you're right, is not the meritocratic MAGA Republican that you are attracted to, Farzad, in this new movement. It is a time where, and Trump was very forceful about this yesterday, is that stop agreeing to these demands, to these hostage-like demands from the Democratic Party. And I'll tell you, we're running a list right now internally of every single Republican or Democrat who came out and tried to push that scam through at the last minute as a complete insult to the American people. Every single one of them. We need to start a new Doge pack, Farzad, right? To back people. And, I'm obviously a Republican, I guess, in that sense. But look, if there's a race somewhere in Illinois or in California where a Democrat's going to win no matter what, we should at least primary that anti-Doge Democrat with a pro-Doge Democrat. At the very least, that's what we should be doing. We should sure as heck be doing that in the Republican Party, putting our resources, our trust, our energy behind those Republicans who are full-throated supporters of Doge, not the ones that are doing this Stuart Little, Chicken Little thing where it's the sky will fall if we don't give the deep state everything they want between now and Friday at midnight, right? And that's the kind of, to your point, that is the first principles approach of Trump, of JD, of Elon and Vivek is, wait, why? Why are we being forced to do this? Oh, the government's going to shut down for a week. Great. I, by the way, can't think of a better time for the government to shut down than right now.
Yeah.
There's nothing. We need
take
to
a break, everybody.
Everything that they're doing right now. We're going into Christmas. We're going into the new year. Half of them haven't been at the office for 3 years anyway. So they're not even working to begin with. But we really should just shut the government down right now until January 20th. And if that's what we have to do, then so be it. So that's why, I'm so excited for what this new 4 years is going to be. You obviously bring in the bigger structural tailwinds of where we are with AI, where we are with, the robots are coming, whether it's Optimus, whether it's FSD version 13 is incredible. This has never been a better time to be long America. And that's why I think the next 4 years are just going to be, we're not ready for the energy, the excitement, the returns, the wealth creation that we're going to see because the stars are aligning. Regulation, Trump, Congress, first principles, meritocracy, the technology portion, all of it is coming together in a way that it just hasn't in a very long time.
Go for it, Hans.
I get tickled at the people who are, Elon Musk, bad billionaire control government thing right now. It's like, do you not have the common sense where if someone came to your office and they dropped a stack of paper this tall and they said, sign here, please. Would you sign that piece of paper?
Yeah.
Heck no. No one with even a shred of common sense would ever sign because the reason it's that long is so that you can't know what's in it.
That's right.
And so, of course, you're not going to sign it. So the only way they can get you to sign it is to put a gun to your head and hold your kid hostage.
Yeah.
And this is how we have run our government now for years. And this is what the American people are absolutely fed up with. We know that we've been getting mugged every single time one of these omnibus bills gets passed, and there's nothing that we've been able to do about it. And yes, right now, X is going to be the source of a lot of public shame for many, many months to fix this nonsense.
That's exactly right. Well put. The analogy, someone shows up at your house, sign this 1,500-page stack, or else. I mean, think about all the things that were in there. And X has done a great job of exposing all the little nooks and crannies and pork barrel spending. I hear that McDonald's has canceled the McRib because they can't even compete with as much pork as was in that puppy. Absolutely insane, right? And so
7.8 out of 10. That was a pretty good joke.
That's a pretty good one. I thought of it last night, actually. So I'm going to be completely honest. I wanted to shower last night. It wasn't exactly spur of the moment. I'll tell you when they are, but that wasn't. but the truth is, there was nothing in there. You know, Vivek did the math, put it on X. You only need $360 billion to run the government between now and March. So what was all this other stuff in there? What was all that other stuff? What was the point of that, right? And that type of thinking, not just this particular continuing resolution, but that type of anti-growth, anti-productive, anti-meritocratic thinking is why the country is not meeting its potential, right? Talk about meritocracy. That was not meritocratic yesterday. Meritocracy is, okay, we got 1,500 pages. Every member of Congress, all 535 of you, you need to read that. Take the weekend. We'll come back on Monday. We'll have a big debate. You can ask anything. Nothing's off limits. That's a meritocracy. That was at its core, Farzad, at its core, what was the most sinister attribute of that scam yesterday was it was anti-meritocratic because it wasn't trying to be vote up or down on the merits of all 1,500 pages. It was do it now. Hire this person now. Pass this bill now or else. That is what has afflicted companies from Starbucks to Best Buy. Best Buy is a total joke, by the way. It's a terrible business now. And it can't be divorced from the fact that they have this.
Shout out Best Buy.
You know, but it is, whether it's Starbucks, Best Buy, the government, the CR, all of these share one common thread. They are anti-meritocracy. And restoring meritocracy is a precondition to getting to where we need to be as a country.
Yeah. You know, some of the ideas I saw float around X yesterday, like this is why I think Elon buying X is such a huge deal, because the sort of discourse, like the political discourse on X is by far the best on the internet by an order of magnitude.
That's right.
That's what I really love about that platform, truly, because you really do get a variety of opinions, a variety of discourse. Half of my timeline is people like cheering Elon and Vivek. Half the timeline are people shitting on Elon and Vivek. It's beautiful. Like, that's what I want. I want to see everything that's being discussed, right? So I can make up my own mind. Some of the ideas that have been floated around, I'm curious to see if this is something Doge can help implement, or if it's hopefully Congress can take this on. Can we do something to limit the number of pages in a bill? Can we just say, hey, yeah, from this point forward, a bill can't be longer than 20 pages. It can't be any smaller than an 8 font Arial, right? And then the other idea that I saw, I think Bill Ackman put this forward, is for everything that's in the bill, the politician, the congressman that is attributed to that change, their name has to be there. This person wants this. This person wants this. And then cap it at 20 pages, 8 font. And then if you want more, make a new bill. Put it in a different bill. And then that way we have this assembly line of shit that we can be like, okay, it's going to be very easy to spot if somebody's trying to push something through that is idiotic. And then we'll also, in theory, get consensus around things that actually matter much faster, because you're not stuffing these gigantic 1500. See, even your screen agrees with the thumbs up. Look at that. Yeah. You don't get these like 1500 page bills where no one really knows what the hell is in there. And then you have this, do you even think that's possible? Like, I don't even know if you have background to figure out if that's something that we can do, but is that something that's possible?
Yeah, it actually is. It would really rest on the Speaker of the House to create a culture where that would be possible, right? To essentially create rule changes that say that, look, we want to handle, that's how it used to be 30, 40 years ago. We want to handle each issue at a time, right? So I'll give you an example. What's your favorite restaurant, Farzad?
I have many. So we just went to Doc B's yesterday in Austin at the Domain. Super. Have you been? Are you from Austin?
I haven't. What's it called? Okay.
Doc B's. Yeah.
And Hans, what is the worst restaurant you can think of you would never want to go there even for 10 grand?
Oh, man. I honestly have no idea. We'll just say Long John Silver's because I'm not a huge fan of seafood. I actually have nothing against Long John Silver's. I just don't like seafood a whole lot, and it's the most prominent name that I could think of that's cheap seafood.
Not a sponsor, and will never be a sponsor.
Well, it works out for me because I'm allergic to shellfish. So I wouldn't want to go to Long John Silver's. You couldn't even pay me to go. So let's just put it this way. We take 8 of Farzad's favorite restaurants and we throw in Long John Silver, we throw in Golden Corral, and we throw in Church's Chicken, things that we not might not particularly be fond of. And then instead of saying, oh, we're going to vote to go to one of those restaurants up or down. Hey, do you want to go to Long John Silver's? Yes or no. Hey, do you want to go to Doc B's? Yes or no. No, you only get to vote on all 10 of them at once. And those little bad restaurants are part of that vote. So you never actually get a say, Farzad, on Long John Silver's in and of itself. You're forced to pick that as a concession for Doc B's. You're forced to pick that, in my case, as a concession for Nobu or Capital Grille, right? I'm a bit In-N-Out fan. I love to go to Austin and go to In-N-Out Burger, right? But it's when you start forcing in that stuff that, yeah, I guess we have to go to Long John Silver's twice this month because I wanted to go to Doc B's and that was a concession. There should be no concessions in government. You only do the things that work, and anything that doesn't work, Tesla is not making any concessions. They're not, oh, well, I guess we have to do it this way because we wanted to do the cyber. No, you do everything that works and nothing else. That's how you get it done. And so our whole way of government, Elon would never allow us to say, all right, guys, what are we going to do? We're going to vote on the Model Q, the Cybertruck, FSD and energy. And we're also going to vote at the same time on an internal combustion car at the same time. And you can only vote on all of those 5 things at once, up or down. Well, I guess if we're going to get the ICE car, we have to do that if we want the Model Q, right?
Yeah, and makes so no sense.
What on earth? That is, you would get laughed out. You would get laughed out of a high school business class for proposing that way to run a company. Laughed out. And so why do we tolerate that in the nation's capital at the upper echelons of Congress? And you have Speaker Mike Johnson on Fox yesterday saying, oh, I don't like it either, but we got to do it. Wait, what do you mean? Hold on. I don't like it, but we have to do it. Elon has never said those words at Tesla, has never said those words at SpaceX. Vivek never said those words at Roivant, never said those words at Strive. You guys, being in the independent media, you don't say those words. You don't say things, I don't like it, because it's so antithetical to what we stand for as a country, but I guess we have to do it. That is such an insult, not just to Americans, but to the way that any organization should be run. And so there's a chance we get a new speaker. And just put it on someone's radar. Maybe it's too early to say, but funny enough, Farzad, the Speaker of the House does not need by law to be a member of Congress.
I learned that this morning.
Yeah. wouldn't that be nice to have Vivek or Elon as Speaker of the House? Or heck, give it to JD. He can be Vice President and Speaker. Yeah. Right? Because enough is enough. And so bring common sense. This just goes back to the first principles. First principles says you start from scratch. Why are we doing bills where everything is tied together and we have to do an up or down? Let's take these things one by one, but we'll have to come to DC more often. Okay, then you'll have to come to DC more often. That's fine. Do your jobs. No one told you to do this. You can leave at any time. You can resign and we can have a special election. Do your jobs. Return this to a meritocratic, transparent, accountable system. And that's, again, yesterday, I think, Farzad, that 5 years from now, we'll look back on December 18th, 2024 and say, that's when Doge really, truly began. It didn't begin in January. Yeah. It began almost a month prior on December 18th, because this is the moment. This is the moment right now that we said, screw off to the system. We're taking charge. And it's the beginning of the end of that bureaucratic state that is really hurting the country.
Yeah, I think truly that's what has me really excited about the success of Doge long term, is that it has started even before it officially formed on the 20th of January. It's such an exciting proposition. It really is. What's crazy to me is that the example you gave of the restaurants, right? It's such an obvious example of why this whole thing is broken. And what I've always been told, you know, before I really took control of my brain and allowed my common sense to start to filter what was going through my brain, you know, I was told, well, this is how compromise works. Compromise works by just accepting things you don't like and also getting the things you like. And I'm like, okay, but did we pass it through a filter that says if it makes sense. Have we done that? Have we passed it through a filter to confirm that it's a good idea? Have we passed it through a filter that says, oh, this will actually do exactly what we want it to do, right? Like, I am much more willing to compromise on something that will work, but maybe it's on the wrong priority, for an example. Like, if it's like a 10 priority in my brain, but someone's like, this is a 2 priority, and I'm like, okay, fine, we can figure that out. Maybe we need to reprioritize. But we don't even pass it through a filter that says, oh, this is actually a good idea. Right. That's what really breaks my brain about why, like why the government has been working the way it has. It's like, it blows my mind. Go ahead, Hans, before I blow it.
Let's propose one of those filters that I think is really important. It ties into the idea of meritocracy, but it also ties into why our government is so broken. And I think that filter is accountability. That does this thing that we're voting on create accountability, or does it destroy accountability? Does it obfuscate? Does it hide things? And, you know, that's one of the things that's also clear, like I said, in this continuing resolution style of passing the budget, is that this is something that is intentionally designed to remove accountability from people and to create, you know, the other thing that you can do in something that's 1500 pages long that you know the contents of, but other people don't know the contents of, is that you can make it say whatever you want it to say whenever it suits you. And that is a type of tyranny and anti-democratic system that, like, part of what democracy is should be accountability. And it's just the exact opposite of that.
That's exactly right. And I love that word, Hans, tyranny. I just looked it up. And this definition really describes the actions of yesterday and what we see: cruel, unreasonable, or arbitrary use of power. Cruel, unreasonable, or arbitrary. Wait, why are we voting on everything at once in a binary up-down? That's arbitrary, unreasonable. You have to concede and agree to doing things that maybe, like, I can agree to your point, Farzad, right? A number 10 priority has to become a number 3. Fine. It leaves it on the priority list. This stuff is on the never touch list. Don't even think about it, or you're going to have to go on vacation for a week to purge your mind of how deeply rotten these ideas are. And that's what they want us to negotiate over. And cruel, because it's cruel and it's disrespectful to the people who contribute to our government. Whether you're the woman who's paying into Social Security, whether you're the businessman in Bill Ackman or Elon, whether you're us entrepreneurs who are paying our taxes, saying we want to do it, but we want to do it and we want it to be done right. And so I think tyranny, I think that word gets thrown around a lot, but I think it's especially apt here, Hans. It's cruel, it's unreasonable, and it's sure as heck arbitrary, because there's no rhyme or reason for why this should be done the way it is. And, you know, you think of it, it passes, just does not pass the common sense test. You go to the streets of Austin, you asked 100 people, hey, should the government vote on policy by policy, or should they lump 100 things together in 1500 pages, not tell you who did what, and then force you to vote on it in 48 hours? Farzad, 99 of 100 people would say, do it one by one. And you know, and I know, and Hans knows, that 99 out of 100 didn't vote for Donald Trump. So there's something about DOGE that is just so transcendent of the political divide in our country. And I'll tell you the truth. I joked earlier about this super PAC thing. I talked to an election lawyer yesterday who's a friend. I'm seriously considering starting a super PAC to help the efforts of DOGE outside the government, to find the right candidates in races, whether it's, if it has to be, it has to be Mike Johnson's own race in Louisiana, to find a pro-DOGE candidate. Maxwell Frost, he's the youngest member of Congress. He's from Orlando in Florida, and he ran Democrat. He ran this whole crybaby campaign last night that the billionaires are trying to shut down the government so they can ram through. We need to find a Republican, ideally, to run against that individual in that election in 2026. We need to make sure that as many of these close races, we can find a pro-Doge, pro-government efficiency candidate to back it. Think, what do you think about this name, Hans? Doge backwards is EGOD. And EGOD stands for Efficient Government Opens Doors. It opens doors for small businesses. It opens doors for workers. It opens doors for the golden era of America.
What do you think about that? You going to contribute, Hans?
Yeah, that I find it interesting. The it just doesn't roll off the tongue very well. I like the concepts and the ideas behind it a lot. Yeah. But yeah, the word egoed does.
All right, well, it's on the tentative list. We'll have to come up with a better name. By the time this goes live, we'll maybe have a better name for you guys. But
yeah. You
know, I mean, I think that's the thing is, I think it's time to put our resources behind Doge, right? Doge is going to succeed. We just have to make sure it can succeed in the biggest way possible for the country.
Yeah. I think when I think about Doge is I don't want it to be an Elon Musk Vivek thing. Like my fear is that, well, my what I'm excited about is that, you know, the new group comes in, the anti-establishment people come in. Oh, by the way, one thing I wanted to mention that I forgot. I love how Bernie simultaneously supports Doge, but then when Doge does its job, he opposes Doge. It's like, oh no, I want to be anti-establishment the way that I want to be anti-establishment, right? It's almost like we forget what anti-establishment really means. Like, anti-establishment by default means chaos to start because you're going against establishment, you know? But go ahead, Hans. Did you want to say something before
It's a symptom of his conflation of terms. He believes that billionaires equal establishment, so you can't have Elon be involved in disrupting the establishment because then it just gets more establishment-y.
Right.
And, you know, I think that billionaire can, like, there's a correlation, but I don't think it's causal. And I think, you know, really what we should be looking at is who are first principles thinkers. Who actually has a coherent philosophy? Whose coherent philosophy actually is something that coincides with the flourishing of humanity instead of the hollowing out of society? And some of those people are going to be billionaires. Some of them are not. Some of them are going to be normal, everyday people. Some of them are not. And so the coalition of people that actually want to have a functioning society, a functioning government, and to actually create a society over time where our children have better opportunities than we have instead of worse opportunities than we have. I mean, I think that the general sense and one of the sources of a lot of the just discontent in society is that people realize that our parents probably lived better lives than we were going to live, that they had more opportunities than we're going to have. And while that works for the people that happen to be in the halls of power today, that doesn't work for most young people. That doesn't work for the future. And so, you know, whether it's people on the right or the left who just feel that malcontent and rightly say, something needs to be done about this. that is the problem that needs to be addressed. And we should go to war on figuring out what are the correct solutions that will get us from here to there. And that, you know, that is why meritocracy is so important. I think that the reason that we live in an era where the future looks less bright, or at least, you know, several years ago, I think we lived in an era where the future looked much less bright than the past, is because we had just destroyed the idea of meritocracy because we wanted out of a sense of empathy to say, well, we have to support this redistribution of wealth to whoever is able to wrest power in, you know, based on very strange definitions of diversity too. This is a quick aside, but it just strikes me as both absurd and ridiculous that when we talk about diversity, we immediately call to mind external descriptors of our appearance.
Right.
Or how we show up in the world instead of who, like, how do you think?
Right.
What is your personality? A lot of the, you know,
lived experience.
You would never say, oh, we need to support introverts. We need to support extroverts. Like,
yeah,
these things that I think are much more substantive in someone's actual identity, we have reduced to the most crass and inconsequential factors of who a person is. And I don't think that that's by accident personally. But we have used that, those intersectional descriptions of who someone is on the outside as a cudgel to right. then allocate, okay, these people deserve the most of the redistribution and these people deserve the least of the redistribution. And like, you can only do that for so long before it shows up in the growth of your economy as a nation. The amount of opportunities that you have, the amount of opportunities that your children have. And that's the thing that we have got to get straightened out.
And that's exactly right. It's the essence of how broken this is, because you talk about it with this strange definition of diversity, right? I mean, the NASDAQ, their diversity requirement wasn't you have to have a mathematician on the board. You have to have a conservative or a libertarian on the board. You have to have someone who grew up in a different country on the board. No, you had to have a Black woman on the board. And so it's a very unique and contrived and forced way to define diversity too. That's the issue, right? I believe that organizations would be better off if they had a conservative working there. I believe that progressive organizations would be better off if they had a conservative. And I actually think that most conservative organizations would be better off. We have a noted progressive who works on the Azoria team. It's five of us. I think we are a better organization for the debate that comes about through him being an employee and being a colleague here. And so now, would I want to mandate a board to have a conservative or have a progressive if it was an overly conservative? No, I don't think you need to mandate that. I think that you don't need to mandate EV car sales. And yet I have a Model 3 and a Model Y, and I wouldn't ever own an ICE vehicle ever again. The things that are so self-evidently good and make sense, you don't have to mandate them. You shouldn't have to mandate EV cars, and you shouldn't have to mandate diversity if it's such a good thing. If it's, look, the US women's gymnastics team, they took it away with the gold this past summer. There's nothing in that gymnastics charter, Farzad, that says that there needed to be an African-American woman on the team. And yet we got the brilliant Simone Biles. Nothing, Hans, that said you needed an Asian-American woman. And yet we got the brilliant Sunny Lee. And so natural diversity is a byproduct of a meritocratic system. You want a wide pool of talent, but you don't want to force things that are just not natural. And I think that's, I mean, I'm surprised that, I mean, I'm thinking about it more, meritocracy is the common thread, the rejection of it, of what is hurting so much of this country today.
100%. Yeah, I really think it's a first principles answer to redirecting the ship. It's like, just get back to meritocracy and everything else takes care of itself. If you go back, and then by default, a true meritocratic society will have a free market by default, right? And I think that's what's beautiful about it is like the culture changes. The culture changes to go back to what this country was intended to really deliver on from the very beginning, which is the maximization of people's potential.
That's right.
And that's how you do it. Like, why did we get away from that? It's so weird that we got away from that. You know?
It is weird. And it's the exception, not the rule. I can't imagine a world in which Vice President Harris won last month, because I don't know if we would be as ebullient, as bullish on the country as we are right now. I mean, last year, the University of Minnesota put out a guide to microaggressions. And microaggressions, for those in your audience who may not be familiar, and I'd be glad to know that they're not familiar because you shouldn't know anything about this, but a microaggression is the progressive idea that a statement can be an indirect statement of discrimination against a marginalized group. And so on page one of their University of Minnesota examples of racial microaggressions is the following statement, Hans. I believe the most qualified person should get the job. That is racist. That is racist. Oh my
God. That's amazing. We should change our name to the podcast to Microaggressions, because my God, this is like a...
I don't even think we should, you know, relegate it just to microaggressions. I think that that's aggressive, and I think maybe being aggressive can be good.
Man. Think about that. Think about that, Hans.
Crazy.
Right? That's the world. That's the world we've been living in since COVID, is that saying the most qualified American should get the job is actually an indirect act of racism. Donald Trump rejects that. The new dawn begins. It began in many respects yesterday, but it begins in full force, in earnest, on January 20th. And all of this crap, from the smallest to the deepest, it's got to go. We got to start new. And we will.
Dude, it's exciting. It's exciting. I think there's so much to be hopeful for. I mean, I can tell you from my perspective, I feel significantly more positive, significantly more bullish about the future of this country, given, and it's not just a singular moment with Trump getting elected, but everything else that has come with it. Even with Trump himself, like his rhetoric, I feel like has improved as well. The guy's he's not a flawless individual, but right. Far from it, like all of us, but I just feel like his rhetoric has improved. The fact that he has this cohort of Dems that have come to his side, former Dems, and Elon, Tulsi, RFK, the Doge team is starting early on their mandate. These are all things that we can all be very excited for. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be messy. It's going to be chaotic. And then hopefully, come the 250th birthday of America, we're going to be like, holy shit, that's fucking awesome. What happened, you know? And that's what I expect is the likeliest outcome, to be completely honest. Short of a knock on wood, a black swan event or something that derails this entire thing. I really do feel very, very hopeful. So, James, where can people find you, man? This was, we have to have you back, bro. This was so cool.
Go before ahead, we wrap up, yeah. Farzad, actually, I want to circle back to the ETF question and push you a little bit, James, on how you're thinking about the second and then potentially third order impacts beyond, you know, providing access to everyday Americans to a financial vehicle that, from first principles, you reason will outperform the other alternatives and give them, you know, a shot at financial independence, freedom, greater wealth creation. But if it is true and holds out to be true in the financials that the companies that pursue meritocracy outperform the S&P 500, what do you think that will cause? Like, what are the ripple effects of that in markets, in the ETF industry, in financial management?
It's going to be an exercise where, you know, we can do the research, we can show the returns, you know, S&P is up nearly 100% over the past 5 years, Starbucks is up 12, Best Buy is down 1%, it's done absolutely nothing for 5 years. And let's not pretend this is not all because of a hiring policy, a racial quota, but it starts from that precondition that if you reject meritocracy, you can't really build a fortified business on top of that. If we're successful, you'll see it between the divergence of returns. You know, we are essentially S&P 500 X, the three dozen companies. They're holding you back. The cool thing about removing the companies like Starbucks and Best Buy is, one, they've underperformed. I think they're going to continue to underperform. So if you have an index fund like the S&P, That's up 100% over the past 5 years. And Starbucks and Best Buy were up 12 and down 1. By removing them, by not having had those companies in the S&P 500, the S&P would have been up even more by taking out those lagging losers. And so what it means is that we stand to outperform the S&P, not just through removing the losers, but when you have 460 stocks versus 500, it means you have a greater allocation to the meritocratic names. So folks who buy Azoria Meritocracy ETF, the ticker will be SPXM when it comes out in early March, folks who buy that will have a slightly larger exposure to NVIDIA, to Tesla, to Palantir, and so on. And so we're removing the laggards that reject meritocracy. And as a result, we're also giving you the opportunity to own a smaller piece of the big names that are committed to it. And so I think the repercussions of this will be is that after a couple of years, I hope, of our fund outperforming the traditional plain old S&P, that a lot of people will look at their portfolios and say one of two things. We've got to push these companies more vocally to restore meritocracy, to restore greatness. And if not, if they're not going to do this, then we have to move our money to a fund that actually only invests in companies that are committed to doing this. I've been telling our investors that it's really a win-win. The win is that these companies restore meritocracy, we add them back in and they contribute to the returns, or they refuse to accept the evidence before them that meritocracy wins and they're removed from the fund, which means our investors are not exposed to that underperformance. They're only exposed to the companies that we think will do well because they're hiring the best and brightest and not apologizing for it. And so it won't happen overnight, Hans, but perhaps 3 to 4 years from now, the industry will wake up to this concept. They think about large caps and small caps and semis and industrials and consumer discretionary. Let's create a new category of company in America. Those that are meritocratic versus those who aren't. And in the same way, Hans, you might not invest in Farzad's hip Austin coffee joint if he said, hey, I got a great coffee, I got a great location, but I'm going to employ 30% racial and ethnic diversity amongst my baristas. No American, Republican, Democrat, Black, white, rural, urban would put their own hard-earned money in that business. And our message to them is if you wouldn't do that in a local coffee business, invest in that type of business, why are you doing it with Starbucks indirectly through an S&P 500 fund? And I can't wait for that fund, SPXM, to go live in March, because ultimately it's going to be an experiment. We certainly could be wrong, but the market is not going to lie. The market is ultimately going to reward meritocracy one way or the other.
Have you thought about completely decoupling from the S&P and just going straight up any company that's max meritocracy?
Yeah.
Regardless of where they are, that's the fund. Have you thought about that?
We have. We absolutely have. That I think is a product we're seriously considering. We don't want to do these things at the same time because we're trying to figure out the right way to connect with investors and answer their questions about it. But you're right. I mean, not only do you want to say, oh, look, I believe 100% in the power of index investing, right? The idea that at any given time you could own the top 500 companies. And then every year the S&P does the work for us by kicking out the losers that are falling below market cap or not meeting certain profitability metrics. The power of index investing is undeniable. But if we could take that to the next level, to your point, maybe we'll call it meritocracy max. Let's pick the top 25 stocks in that S&P that are just full-throated, unapologetic, unwavering meritocracies. That would be a supercharged outperformer, I think, compared to just the S&P. But it's something we definitely want to do.
Yeah. I think like from my, if I view myself as like a, as like somebody that would be considering this product, again, that's somebody that's just interested in who you are as an individual.
Yeah.
For me, it's like my investing profile, it already defaults to companies that have the greatest leaders on the planet, and the greatest leaders on the planet, exude meritocracy as a first principle approach to building a business. Right. And so I think if there is some sort of investing vehicle for people to really capitalize on what I believe is going to be the defining force behind the most successful companies in the next 10, 20 years. You know, I don't know how the fuck to build an ETF, But if I will build it through my own little portfolio, right? Like the Farzad portfolio is like a really shitty mini meritocracy ETF of sorts, right? But again, like I'd really want to applaud you for really thinking about this at a deep level and trying to come out with something that capitalizes on this, because I really do think in the long term, a return to meritocracy is not just going to be good for investors, people that are invested in those companies, but it's also going to be good for the country as a whole from a cultural perspective, because it's going to go back to fulfilling people's potentials. And that's what really gets me excited, truly.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Farzad, for those kind words and the invitation to be here. And a great conversation, Hans. Thanks so much. And for your awesome audience, investazoria.com. Would love to get your email down and keep you updated on these products, not just meritocracy, but perhaps Farzad Meritocracy Max, right? The top 25 names in the US that are just 110% committed to these first principles.
Yeah. And then on X, at @J_Fishback, make sure you go check them out. James, thank you so much, brother. We'll have you back.
My pleasure. Thanks, Hans. Thanks, Farzad.
All right. We'll end record here and then hang around for a second.